Hey, this is a dark tangent, organizer of DEF CON. You're about to listen to some speeches from DEF CON 3, held July 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Tropicana Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1995. Now, the Tropicana has since been renovated. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, all rights reserved, the dark tangent, and DEF CON Communications. Permission is expressly granted, though, for educational, non-profit use. If you have any more questions about DEF CON, or want to send me some email about the copyright status, please email me at dt@defcon.org, or the website is www.defcon.org. Now, kick back, get ready for some good speeches, and thanks for supporting it.
For those who just joined us, we're just killing time. We're on DEF CON time, which means we don't start till 10:30. I'm just answering questions about Area 51. I think we had a question over here about Aurora. Well, I respond to this question like every other. It's all true. Whatever you want, it's all true. Aurora is an alleged hypersonic aircraft. People got very suspicious when the Air Force retired the SR-71 without a fight. The Air Force never retires something without a fight. Why would they do that if they did not have a new, faster aircraft to replace it? And so for many years, a lot of aviation buffs have been out there at the border of Groom Lake trying to catch a glimpse of this alleged Aurora. The best information we have is that there was such a project. The military did have a black budget project to build a hypersonic craft. The question is, how far along did this project get? And latest information, the news reports in Washington says this project was canceled in the early 1990s. It may not be flying. It may not exist. Quite frankly, personally, I have more confidence. It's more the UFOs are more tangible to me than the Aurora spacecraft. The reason is this sort of thing takes enormous amounts of money. Look at how much they dumped into the B-2, and you know, billions and billions and billions. And I find it more plausible that they maybe built a prototype or two, and then grounded it. It just was not meeting its goals. We have the problem of the skyquakes in Southern California, where we have unusual earthquake-like manifestations that are not coming from the earth, that seem to be coming from the sky and seem to be leading to Groom Lake. The latest of those that I heard of was at least a couple of years ago. I don't know what that means. It could mean Aurora, but it's circumstantial evidence. If you want to believe in UFOs, maybe it's the UFOs that are causing it. I still haven't put the whole story together on Aurora to say that it exists or doesn't exist. To me, it just doesn't make sense.
Well,
follow up. No, I wasn't aware of this contract. How much? $50 million a year. Like, there's a lot of reasoning. I've heard all the reasoning back and forth on the Aurora. The question is, why would you cancel the SR-71 if you didn't have something faster for reconnaissance? Well, reconnaissance doesn't have to be fast. Reconnaissance can be slow and stealthy, and this is what, and UAVs are much more cost-effective for that sort of thing. So the question is, why do you need a hypersonic craft? Why do you need to go fast? Well, single stage to orbit, I guess, would be a good goal. I just don't know, but it's all true. I just don't know. Yes. Yeah. There have been. The question was, has the Air Force released, does the Air Force have new stealthy reconnaissance drones? And yes, they do. They're based now in Nellis Air Force Base. They have a number of them in projects, but the question is, once these things become unveiled and rolled out, well, no one's interested anymore, and I certainly lose interest. Yes, sir. The question is, are other countries leasing Groom Lake for their own testing programs? I've never heard that. Groom Lake is so, the owners are so paranoid about Groom Lake that it seems to me they would never want to share it with anyone. They certainly wouldn't want to share it with the American people. But I've never heard any such rumors. Now, at the nuclear test site next door, the British do an awful lot of testing. But I've never heard any other government associated with Groom Lake, aside from the alien government. Question, sir. Oh. Well, I don't exist. But if I did exist, the story goes that I'm a programmer. I used to be a programmer in Boston. I worked on systems for banking in the C language on the IBM PC, and I was involved in a startup company and became pretty successful at that and bailed out and came to hunt for UFOs. Now, I am right down, I try to stay right down in the middle on the UFO question. I don't need to make a choice on the UFO question. All I do is collect data, and the data should tell the story one way or the other. If something like Bob Lazar comes my way, I have to take the logical steps to investigate that and make my findings known. I am still on the fence. I will go off the fence enough to say that it's worthy of my time to look into the UFO question, that this is a mystery worthy of Sherlock Holmes. It's not a simple case. I moved to the small town of Rachel. The question is, how long have I been here? I moved to the small town of Rachel about 2.5 years ago, and that's the closest you can get to the secret base down here. I've taken it upon myself to publicize the base, and probably all of this, a large portion of this publicity that you've seen in the press recently is the result of my pounding the pavement to get people to cover this. And it's not a hard thing to do, because everybody loves the secret base. The press love it. They lap it up. And the more that the Air Force says nothing about this base, the more everyone wants to know. So it's been a cakewalk for me. Yes, sir. The unnamed. The question is, what other foreign countries are testing advanced technologies? And I can't think of any. The whole justification for Groom Lake was born in the 1950s as a testing base for the U-2 spy plane, later for the SR-71 and the F-117. It's a high technology base, and it's been used for testing of a lot of miscellaneous technology and radar and things that specifically to counter the Soviet threat. Now that the Soviets are gone, we certainly have a lot of threats out there. We have Saddam and Iran and all the former Soviet bloc that may have weapons, but nothing technologically sophisticated at all. Follow up? At Groom Lake? At Area 51, you mean whether the technology is being used to... Well, the whole justification of the military, of course, is the foreign security threat. They have no mandate here. I have seen no evidence. What I have seen that I know about at Groom Lake, I've seen stealth. I've seen the B-2 there a lot. The B-2 makes repeat passes at radar ranges to test its stealth profile. That is a principal purpose of that. I know that small arms, various types of military weaponry are tested there. I don't think anyone intends it to be tested, used against the American people. I think that the military has this patriotic thing about, but who knows? Who knows what's going on out there? Anything you want.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to start it up now. I guess this is the hardcore elite, so I should probably go get a really nice giveaway for this group. Someone just donated a quad speed CD-ROM. Think that would be a good prize, good giveaway? Okay. Yeah, it's SCSI with drivers. An added bonus. It's an OEM drive, so it's cool. 641. You know, I don't like these tickets. I want to get more. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, but the reel didn't start at 1 or anything.
It started, like, I think, at 300.
Or
I got, like, 400.
What was the number?
Like,
yeah. Okay, here's the new stack. There's water everywhere up here. I'm adrift in a sea, okay. The water doesn't exist. I disbelieve. Geez, that's a really, really high number. These are all really high numbers. Must reward the first. Diehards. How about 459? 348. Survey says 610. 395. Jeez, what's going on with these? Okay, I'm just going to start throwing these things around. 358. 681. 739. Lower. 431.
Oh,
518. 397. $315. No, I just did it. I made up $315. I'll make up another one. $333.
Yes.
No. You burn in hell. $434. $434. $391.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That one I didn't make up. Yeah, that was for the modem. Yeah. And whoever, I have a feeling nobody really wants these anymore, but you're going to keep getting them. I've got about 20 left or so, you know. 370? 478? 734? 478? 600? They deserve it. 452. 648. There you go. And you know what? I might actually tell you the correct pin settings on the back sometime today. Okay, anyway, enough warm-up, enough giveaways, enough freebies, enough of the gimmicks to keep the crowd entertained. Our next speaker is Glenn Campbell, who runs, you were just listening to him for the last 20 minutes. You know what's going on. Okay.
We're discussing Area 51, which of course doesn't exist, but if it did exist, we would be discussing it here today. I don't exist, you don't exist, and if any information is conveyed, you didn't hear it here. Okay, this will be like talk radio today. I'm here to take your questions, but I'll just give you a little introduction about Area 51, what it is, and where we stand so far. You're fortunate to be in the Tropicana Hotel. If you will walk right out this door and take the elevator up to the 21st floor, there you'll find a window, and down below you is a little isolated terminal on the McCarran Airport. It's an unmarked terminal, looks like a small city terminal. There are 737 jets parked on the tarmac. That is the entrance to Dreamland. If you work at one of two secret bases up to the north of us, the Tonopah Test Range and Area 51, you will park your car in this big parking lot and take a 737 jet, most of them every day, up to your workplace. There you'll be bused to wherever you happen to work. Area 51 is adjacent to the Nevada test site. The number 51 comes from the early numbering system for the Nevada test site. The base that is at the shore of Groom Dry Lake was built first in the 1950s for the U-2 program, later used for the SR-71 program to develop these craft before they existed, and then later for the F-117. Of course, what interests a lot of people now are the UFOs, which are all over the place up there. The UFO story started in 1989, essentially, when a gentleman named Bob Lazar, who claims to be a physicist, came forward on a local TV station here in Las Vegas to say that he had worked with alien craft at Papoose Dry Lake, which is about 15 miles south of Groom Lake. Now you can, many people believe or disbelieve Bob Lazar, but the fact is historically this is what started the gold rush to Area 51. Bob Lazar tells a very coherent tale, a very intelligent tale about working with alien craft, alien flying saucers, in underground bunkers, underground hangars built into a hillside. Physicists can debate back and forth whether this theory that he explains for flying saucer propulsion is nonsense or is plausible. But the fact is, he's picked a good place to put his secret saucer base, true or false, because we have a vast military area, including and behind Area 51, the size of Connecticut at least, where the military could do whatever it wants. And perhaps the real issue here is not what's out there, but do we trust the government that much that we'll let them have a place where they can do anything they want? It is a place where the mind has free rein. I see it like a Rorschach test. People look at Area 51 and see whatever it is they want to see. If people come looking for flying saucers, then lo and behold, they're going to see flying saucers. If they come looking for spirits, they'll see spirits. If they come to debunk the flying saucer tales, that's what's going to happen. So Area 51 is above all a state of mind. And this is what interests me is at least as much as what's really going on there. How do people approach the unknown? This is a place that is essentially, for me, cutting-edge humanity. It tells you more about the people outside looking in than it tells you about what's inside. Now, probably what people want to know most of all is what is inside, and I'm going to tell you I don't know. I know that in Area 51 proper, Area 51 is a block of land 10 miles by 60 miles wide. There is a large Air Force facility there, the equivalent to any large Air Force base. It has the longest runway in the world. It has some advanced radar antennas, a lot of big hangars. Otherwise, it's an ordinary air base. It was used for the development of secret aircraft in the past, so it's presumed that it's being used for the development of secret aircraft at the present. What's going on there now? I say anything you want. Anything you want, it's true. So with that, I can start on questions. If we can sort of focus things on areas that you want to cover, I can go into more detail. Questions? Yes, sir. We have no pictures. The question is, does anyone have pictures of the Aurora? The Aurora is another one of these items that may or may not be operating out of Groom Lake. It's like flying saucers. There's a lot of folklore wrapped up in this. The SR-71 was retired by the Air Force until it was reactivated, and that raised the question, well, why would the Air Force retire the fastest plane in the world if it didn't have something faster to replace it? So this is where the Aurora speculation started. Now, the name Aurora is probably misnamed. This name appeared on an early government budget, so many billions of dollars, and it was assumed that that was the name for a hypersonic spy plane. It turns out that that item on the budget was a B-2 funding proposal and was not the Aurora at all, so it probably does not have that name. No one has taken a picture of the Aurora. People have taken pictures of these donuts, what are called donuts on the rope contrails, where you have a puff and a stream and a puff and a stream. That is consistent with a pulse jet engine, something that goes boom, 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 boom through the sky. But also contrails can break up in that way due to air currents. And naturally, no one has a clear picture of a craft. Most anyone has is a picture of a light in the sky, which, as usual, can be anything you want it to be. Question? No trespassing. Yes. They're controlling our minds. They have various mind control rays that the Department of Energy is concerned with energy. I've really found nothing sinister about the Department of Energy. Okay. I find the DOE to be a bland, uninteresting agency. I've interacted with the people at the DOE quite a bit. They're concerned with all the problems of nuclear energy, and they've got their hands full with that. I mean, that's just a mess that I wouldn't wish on anyone. But the question is, what is the Air Force up to? And who runs Area 51? There's a good question. Is it the DOE? And no, it is not the DOE. Is it the Air Force? I'm not really sure it is the Air Force. The Air Force has conceded publicly that it has, quote, it has facilities at Area 51. We don't at Groom Dry Lake. Area 51 doesn't exist. The Air Force has admitted publicly we do have facilities near Groom Dry Lake. What are those facilities? Are they an outhouse? Does it control the whole base? Whole facility? I don't know. There could be other agencies, maybe, that we don't know about. A gun. The Department of Energy needs guns to protect our liberty. Yes, sir. The question is, what is the distance from fence point to fence point? Well,
5 miles between one fence, and then you've got all this restricted space, and you have no fence?
You've got no fences. Hey, you can walk into Area 51 any day. I invite you to. Everyone, let's all do it today. Well, let's get back to that first question. There are no fences out there. This is a wide open desert. What The Groom Lake Base is in a vast basin. What you see if you go north of Las Vegas are these vast desert basins. They can be 30 miles wide, 30 miles long, and they were former lakes. Area 51 is in the bottom of one of these basins. It's an open terrain. If you choose to, you can walk right up to it. But I assume that somewhere along the line, someone's going to detect you and someone is going to be unhappy.
Okay, the next question is CCD camera and a remote control plane.
CCD camera and a remote control plane. I've heard that idea so many times, but no one's done it. No one wants to risk their CCD camera and their plane. Right.
And that's it. Are there enough curiosity seekers that'll throw in a buck or two to go someplace and watch the videotape of what happens?
Well, you can take a collection here. I don't think that's going to be very effective. First of all, a CCD camera in a model plane, that's going to be rough. It's the same thing with if you're in a Cessna. A lot of people, this gentleman talked about flying along the border and just looking in, and certainly you can do that. The military operating area, this is the area around Groom Lake is called Dreamland. That is the name used by pilots to refer to this restricted airspace, and nobody flies into that, not even military pilots, without authorization. But just outside Dreamland, you can fly a Cessna right up along the border and look right in. The question is, people have reported to me, it's so rough, it's so turbulent, unless you have something to steady your camera, some sort of steadying device, you're just seeing a blurred lake bed is all you're going to see. And the same thing if you fly a little plane in. You don't. Okay. The problem with dumping any sort of hardware into this project is you're talking about a vast area. I don't think that Area 51 proper, the little base that everyone sees pictures of, is that interesting in itself. I think that what's really interesting is this vast desert area behind Area 51 at the north end of the test site, buried deep within the zone. And as I say, you're talking about an area the size of Connecticut. How much can you really scope out in one flight of a model plane?
Okay, that's
information
I need.
Yes, sir. It did not happen. It would not happen. Pardon? They will show up. Yes. The statement is, if you walk across the border, there's no fence, you will find visitors. You will be greeted. That goes without saying, but you may not be greeted. You might get 10 miles into the zone before you are greeted. 99% of their defense at the border, at the closest border along public land, is vehicular defense. You can't drive a vehicle in easily because you're going to trip those sensors. You're going to, first of all, throw up a big dust cloud as you're driving along. You can't drive in a vehicle. But if you're determined, you can certainly walk in. And the question there is, are you bringing enough water to get you in and out? Yes, sir. No, I've heard all the stories, ammonia sensors, IR sensors, nothing that I've detected that I have in my hand. It's certainly easy. I imagine that when you're getting, at some point, you will encounter, as you approach the lake bed, I assume you will encounter some new perimeter. When you first cross the border at public land, you're crossing into the Nellis bombing range, eventually you will get to where they don't actually do any bombing. You will get to Area 51 proper, as I say, this 60-square-mile block of land. I assume there is another perimeter there, and there you're on a flat lake bed. they can pick you out by heat sensors. If they put a fence there, they can keep the cows out, which is important. Possibility is you go in a cow suit, right? But if they've got a fence there to keep out the cows and you go beyond that fence, then obviously they're going to pick up your IR signature right away. You're not a rabbit. Yes, sir. You can buy satellite Soviets from the satellite images from the Soviets. This is one of the great ironies. The military does not acknowledge the Area 51, does not talk about it to the American people, but for $500 you can buy a satellite image direct from the Soviets on the open market, very detailed photo of Groom Lake. You can also buy it from the French, and even now you're beginning to buy it from the USGS as well. So sort of our moral justification here is secrecy works only when it's a real secret. When the government is trying to keep secret something that is already public knowledge, that degrades the secrecy, the whole credibility of the secrecy process. I don't deny that there are certainly things out there at Area 51 that need to be kept secret from potential enemies. But what's the sense in keeping a secret that isn't a secret? And this is where it is our job to hack away at the secrets to restore the credibility of the classification system. Yes. Okay. Question, sir. Well, we revealed that the aliens are real, and many people have been driven in, have been greeted. The substance is, the question was, what is the substance of the conversation when people are greeted? Well, there's a protocol. There's a protocol, and you have to know the protocol. A well-dressed man will come up to you. He's dressed in camouflage fatigues. He has no insignia. He's carrying a very big gun. And he said, the gist of the conversation, we get down on the ground. No, face down on the ground. That's sort of the gist of the conversation. Don't look at me. Don't look at me. Down on the ground. Don't look at me. These guys are rather entertaining. In fact, they patrol not only the military area but the adjoining public land. So if you want some fun, even if you can't get to Area 51, it's great fun to go up 150 road miles from here, drive down toward the border, and greet the greeters, as it were, down at the border. And if they want to keep track of you wherever you are when you're near the border, so the logical thing to do is try to lose them. And you sort of hide in the bushes, and sooner or later, if you're really lucky, they'll call out the helicopter to try to find you. But you have to be really special you have to be a dignitary for that to happen. At times I've been out there in the bush and they lost track of me, and we huddled under bushes for 5 hours with a helicopter going over and back and forth, and they never found us, which was great fun. And I think it is our duty to go up there and test test their defenses in that manner. Now they can be extremely, they can be crude, but it's not a personal thing. For example, if you're up near the border, some guy may come up and you say, "Get the fuck out of here." And the way to deal with that is, just shoot him. But no, I mean with a camera. Because they're terrified. If you pull out your camera and point it right, you darn sure he'll take off real fast. Because these guys don't exist, and the most terrifying thing for them is to be shown on CNN. Yes, sir. No, no organized anything. I'm sorry. The question is, has there been any organized effort to probe the border? And really, there hasn't. What I'd like to see is to have a weekend of the radio buffs, where buffs will come up and try to pull everything out of the air that they can. That has never happened. I assume that if we start organizing that, then the opposition will know that we're organizing that, and we'll shut down their transmitters or whatever. I really have, there's a lot you could do. I really have limited confidence in this sort of technical hacking. I believe that a good way to get in there, really, to learn what's going on is through people, and this is maybe something that no one in this room has any experience with, but to understand, to get to know workers and understand, try to get to know the folklore that comes out of workers, and they're very terrified to talk, and this takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to get people to talk. Yes, sir. I used to, the question is, has anyone copied down the license plates at the parking lot? I used to live in Rachel for 2 years up north, and I decided I was going mad up there. So I decided to move to Vegas, and lo and behold, I picked an apartment that's right across the street from that terminal. It just happened to be the best, the next apartment available. And I look out my office window, and there every day people are filing in and out. And I can look through binoculars and see people getting up onto the planes. I can count people getting up onto the planes. I can listen to the radio and tell where each of those planes is going. This is not a capability I've fully used, but I certainly have that capability. The question is, at what point are you crossing a line? The line for me is, I want to break the system. I'm performing a public service in testing the system, but I do not necessarily want to compromise individual people. Some of the people who drive into this terminal have for sale signs on the back of their cars with their phone numbers on it. Now, that's not really top secret, top security. But yes, there's a great, you're looking at a base that doesn't exist, where they certainly have control over their people. People are terrified of talking, but even a base that doesn't exist has to have connections to the outside world, like this terminal. Where are they getting their Twinkies? How are they getting their bottled water coming in? All of these connections can be explored. You can sit at various access points and see what's coming in and out, and from that data you can certainly determine a lot about their schedule and about perhaps what's going on. That's a very prudent thing. The question is, we have limited resources on our side, unfortunately, and they have a lot on their side. Yes, sir. The question is, how has people's attitudes toward the base, in what they see in the base, how has that changed over the years? And I say it hasn't changed in millennia, since the days when people threw spears at the moon to chase away the eclipse. People are the same today as they were back then. They impress upon, we have what is out there, we have an ambiguous stimulus. We have a base where no one knows what's going on, or we have a light in the sky very often and we don't know what that light is. People impress themselves upon that light and they create a mythology, they create a folklore. The Bob Lazar story, I say, is something to be taken seriously. Once that spark began in 1989, suddenly the UFO believers are all coming in here and creating their own folklore around it. And this is fascinating to me. Does not mean that all their folklore is false, but you have to understand the human mind if you're going to get to any of this data, like whether someone saw a UFO. You have to understand the mind of the person who is seeing this thing and seeing how they have distorted the story. And if you understand that distortion, you might be able to get to the data. Just like with Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar may be distorting his information about UFOs just because he is a human and humans do that. You have to understand Bob Lazar to be able to understand what his real data is, whether, for example, he is a liar. Question?
Is there a headcount of the guys that decide to come out and bring the crazy? Is it like 50 or is it 100? Is there a way of estimating how many those are?
We'll start with one or two. The question is if you don't cross the line, you are always watched by two guys in white Jeep Cherokees. They're always out there border. There's always a set of eyes along the border. And once they see you within sight of the border, they will keep an eye on you. Now, if you actually cross the line, then you have a big greeting party. And that could be a dozen people. And they don't use, you know, excessive, there's no such thing as excessive force in their parlance. They will greet you and with all the respect that you deserve. Indeed. Yes, sir. The question is, how many visitors come to Area 51 and what do they do? Until Freedom Ridge was closed about 4 months ago, Freedom Ridge was the place to go. And this is a hill along the border of the military area where there just happens to be a slot where you can look right through and see the base. In the early 80s, they took a whole mountain range. The military annexed a whole mountain range, the Groom Mountain Range, to keep people from looking down on this base. But they overlooked a few little spots, and when the Lazar story hit, suddenly people were out there to find those spots. So the popular thing to do until a few months ago was to drive your four-wheel drive up to the top of this little hill and look down and look at the base. And nobody ever saw anything because, of course, the guards would relay to the base. Their code was, there was a code, but they relay to the base, watchdog is in effect. And they have called off aircraft. If you listen to the aircraft frequencies, they have called off aircraft because people were up there on the hill. Obviously, they're not going to perform when there's an audience there. Now that the base, now that that land is closed, maybe there's more possibility that you could go to a more distant viewpoint and see something. I don't know. Yes? I am a convicted misdemeanorer. I have been convicted of obstructing public justice for interfering in the seizure of a news crew's videotape. This was KNBC, a crew from KNBC in Los Angeles who came to film a rather routine show on, you know, what is going on out there at Groom Lake. And it was reported to the local sheriff that we were seen photographing the secret base, which wasn't true. We were simply doing interviews within sight of the secret base. And this is a fine point. It may be technically, there is a law in the books that says you cannot photograph a restricted installation designated by the president as requiring that protection. The whole question is, well, there's no base out there, so how can you be photographing it? What this means is they just simply, the security patrol, if they see someone with a camera with inside of the base, they will call the local sheriff. The local sheriff will confiscate the film with promise of free processing. And lo and behold, that film never comes back. They did the same thing with when I was out there with this film crew. Film crews, television crews are very conservative. If there's any question of breaking the law, they prefer not to do it, and they usually get stock footage from elsewhere. And that was this case, that we were filming interviews with the camera facing away from the base. We were confronted by the sheriff, who said he was going to seize our tape without a warrant. And I pushed down the door locks and of the vehicle we were in to prevent him from doing that. And for that, I was arrested. My sentence was $250, plus I was condemned to paint the Rachel Senior Center. And right now I'm appealing that conviction so that I do not have to paint the Rachel Senior Center. Yes, sir. The question is, what sort of investigations am I conducting now, and what sort of resources would I like to have? The most important resource is intelligent analysts. I mean, everybody can go out there with all sorts of hardware and collect all sorts of data. We have lots of data. What we need is people to organize this data. And I find that the number one weapon in my arsenal in this regard is the World Wide Web. Because the problem in the past is that little tidbits of open information would come out in the newspapers, they would come out in conversations, but that information would almost instantly be lost. The web is a way to preserve information so that we sort of ratchet up our information about Area 51. That is principally what I do all day, is pull together existing files on the World Wide Web. That is how I investigate, simply by grasping what open information I have and keep ratcheting up, sort of closing the noose on the secret base. I am a human researcher. I look at this sort of phenomena not through gadgetry, but by trying to understand people and what I can understand, what you can trust about people. People are very unreliable, but that doesn't mean that you can have to disregard everything they say, like the Bob Lazar case. The question with Bob Lazar is, if he's telling the truth and the government does have a saucer program, why aren't there other people coming forward? Why don't we have more information? And I seem to have a few leads in this regard. There's one retired gentleman, codenamed J-Rod, who's in his 70s. He's asked his bosses if he can talk about the work that he did, which is, seems to be similar to Bob Lazar's, and his bosses seem to have said yes, and I'm talking to them. Now, this could be just an old guy who's telling me tales, but I find this to be a fascinating mystery that I look into, and that I have to understand whether he is telling me the truth or telling me falsehoods. I have to understand this person, and I have to travel down the threads that he gives me, the little hints that he gives me, and see if they check with other open information. That's the sort of thing that I do. Yes? Just the question is, what sort of communications do they have in there? I doubt seriously they've got a cell site, you know, that you could just sort of tap into. It's assumed, if you go into you can take a public tour of the Nevada test site next door to Area 51, and they can march you. And part of the tour is to march you into the control room, where they theoretically push the button, and you can sit right down at the control panels that all the technicians sit at, and there are various buttons that connect you with various guard shacks, and there's a button right there that says Dreamland, and there's a phone number there. So of course, last time in, I jotted down the phone. That is the and of course I dialed up the number, and it's not a valid number. This is the, I guess you call it the defense telephone system, which is separate from our telephone system, which Audubon, which just consists of those seven digits. I guess if you have access to Audubon, you can dial up Dreamland. I think there's an awful lot you can pick out of the air if you're savvy. For months and months and months after I first arrived, these security forces were broadcasting in the clear. Now, I got such transmissions as one of the guys ordering dinner, and he ordered the prime rib, and he wanted the south end of the northbound prime rib. I figured that was a code for something, but you know, he was just ordering dinner, and I used to be able to track with my scanner that them tracking me, and unfortunately the secret got out, and they went to I guess DES scrambling, which is quite difficult to break. But from that open conversation, I sort of know their MO and what they, how they approach the world. And just another security grunts like anywhere else. Yes. No, Yeah, it seems everywhere I go, I lose my film. They are. Okay. Well, this is one of the incidents. He's talking about an incident in which I went to Washington, and I chose to visit the NSA Museum. And the NSA Museum is, there's a sort of an NSA campus right along a major freeway north of Washington, D.C. And the NSA campus is very, the NSA Museum used to be a motel, a Colony 8 motel, where all the Soviet spies used to just check in and set up their equipment and look across the street to the NSA building. So what did the NSA do? They bought the motel, and they've turned it into a museum. So when I went to visit the NSA Museum, it was a Sunday. I drove off the freeway. It's right facing the freeway. And the place was closed because it was Sunday. So I took out my camera and took a couple pictures of it. And, you know, and then all of a sudden the security guards arrived, and I lost my film. Very, very sad. And I'm still working on it. They promised the free processing. And I asked for double prints, and, you know, they're sure they give me the double prints. But, you know, the customer service, it sucks. Yeah. Well, in my time at Rachel is a small, essentially farming and mining community about 20 miles north of the base. There's almost no economic benefit given to that town. All of the economic benefit from this secret base goes to Las Vegas. All the crew come out on those Janet flights, on those 737 flights, and Lincoln County, where the base is located, gets very little economic benefit. The town of Rachel, I was very well received there. Everyone is as curious as anyone else about what's going on at what they call the test site. The occupants there at Rachel have seen nothing unusual for the most part, except for one little part of Rachel called the Little Ailey Inn, a local bar and grill where all the UFO stories are real, and there's UFOs seen virtually every night. Well, I have a problem. There's two parts of this small rural county. There is Rachel, which is off in its own little corner, and there's the rest of the county, which is a heavily Mormon, heavily conservative county. And there, they don't like me too well. There, they do have a dozen or so odd jobs at the base, and I just as soon get in and out of that part of county as quickly as possible. That's where the sheriff comes from. Yeah. Yes. As far as I know, I've never been watched or monitored. Now, I am living right now across the street from this secret terminal, this air terminal. It wouldn't be too hard to monitor me at that point, but I live by the philosophy if you do everything legally and if you do nothing you're not proud of, then you've got nothing to hide. And my angle is I am a totally open entity. My job is to make things open. I don't live by any code of secrecy, so if they want to watch my daily affairs, if they want to watch me going to the bathroom, that's their problem. That doesn't bother me. I see no evidence of it whatsoever. I've had a lot of military people come to my place when I was in Rachel, but these are guys that are just as curious as everyone else. People in the military, you'd be surprised how many people in the military are interested in UFOs. They don't want to tell anybody about that, but that they want to come to me to ask what I know. I find that very interesting. Yes? Pardon? I didn't catch the... Oh, yes. Well, this is another realm of folklore. I have arch enemies in the town of Rachel. I am the arch enemy of the Little Ailey Inn. The place which is basically contends that there's a new world, whatever the UFOs or Area 51 is all about, it's all tied up with the New World Order and their attempts to take away our guns, and I don't necessarily believe that's true. Anyway, at some point I had a break with them, And ever since then, I've been hearing all sorts of fantastic tales about Glenn Campbell coming out of the illegal alien. And the latest one is that I got kicked out of my apartment and then arrested for espionage. And a member of the press called me up and told me he had heard this, and I just hadn't heard it. And I guess I'm always the last one to know when I'm arrested. Yes. Question was, how did I become interested in Area 51? And frankly, the aliens brought me here. I used to live in Boston. I just got picked up and plunked down. I was looking for adventures in Boston, and I became interested again in the UFO field. I realized that it was populated by loons, loons everywhere, and a lot of ridiculous folklore, but that didn't mean there wasn't some truth out there. One of the consistent stories I read in the UFO folklore is that you could go to this mysterious black mailbox, a rancher's mailbox, about 120 miles north of here along a remote, desolate highway, where you could go any Wednesday night and see flying saucers on demand. What was nice about that story was very specific, a mile point, 29.5. You could go there, and I went there from Boston, and I saw fantastic lights in the sky, UFOs everywhere. But eventually I learned what those things were, and everything that I saw was a flare connected with the war games exercises. You have a lot of exotic aerial lights that can be UFOs if you're looking for them. I learned to dismiss these basic stories. I don't think people are seeing UFOs up there. I think most of those stories are ridiculous. At the same time, I stumbled upon the Bob Lazar story and found that that's more deeper than it seems, and found that that there is a story there that is worthy of investigation, and that's when I basically picked up roots and came here. I can't say that I've really advanced my knowledge that much in 2.5 years. I still don't know what's out there, but at least I know what I don't know, and I know what isn't a UFO and what could be possible. I neither believe nor disbelieve. I believe it is worthy of investigation, and I think that if there are no UFOs, I think that leaves me with as much of a problem as if there is, because we have a lot of evidence out there, a lot of people talking to me. For example, this one other retired gentleman, that if he's lying to me, if he's made this all up, then I still have to rethink my whole worldview. So no matter what it is, I find it a fascinating, fascinating investigation. Yes. The question was, I had reported that there was a hang glider coming off. It wasn't Freedom Ridge, it would have been Bald Mountain, which is the highest mountain in this withdrawn area, looking right down on the base. It was just an observation. I collect the data. I don't evaluate the data for the most part. Endless stories come to me, UFO stories or stories of encounter with the security guys. My job, I see, is to fix those stories in a permanent form by putting them on the web. And from that point, at least people have a base of data that they can continue to investigate. This, if, for example, someone told me a hang glider story that they had seen someone hang glide off of this mountain. Well, that leads to logical areas of investigation. You can call up the sheriff and find out if anyone was arrested, or do whatever else you can. But the most important thing, first of all, is to fix this into some permanent form on the web. Okay. Yes. How many people at Groom Lake? Roughly 850 going through that terminal. And I don't know what 850 means. Does that mean a big project going on there? But it's something that has remained relatively constant over time. That doesn't include the underground aliens, the people who might be living there, or, you know, this is all I can work with is what I see, and this is the majority of the people are coming through there. The majority of the equipment and supplies is coming through Mercury, coming through the nuclear test site. That's all I really know about. The cars in the parking lot are just like any casino parking lot, a mixture, you know, Beaters and some Lexus-I and but you just a cross-section like any high-tech factory. And when you see people coming out, they're just like any workers at a high-tech factory. No different than anyone else. And I would wager the vast majority of the people out there are doing very mundane things. They're janitors, they're secretaries. You can't pick out the highbrow engineers at first glance. Yes. So, again, this may be possible, but I'm walking a very thin political line here. I'm trying to remain friends with all my various political allies, and there is a constituency in Washington who supports the sort of things I'm doing because they're fighting for greater openness in the military. Too much secrecy in any government agency is a dangerous thing because they will waste our money, they will eventually violate rights. I'm trying to remain friends with this constituency in Washington, and I do that by sort of walking a very careful line and recording all those license plates that come in and out of this pace. I think without a good solid reason, I think it's crossing the line at this point. Now, that doesn't mean that at some point I'll have a reason that I do want to write them down. I don't know. But, you know, this is a very, very delicate issue. You know, how much secrecy is proper, and am I really violating national security? I have to watch all angles here. Yes. You want to go there? Okay. What you can see and do there, you can drive from Las Vegas. It's about 2.5 hours. You can drive down this long dirt road, very very scenic, straight dirt road across nothing, and down to the border where we'll see the keep out signs, and you'll see the what we call the camo dudes up on the hill, the anonymous security patrol, and you know they're there for your entertainment, and you know play some games. But don't cross that line because then you have no control over them. But always keep your camera right here, and if you have any problems, just right. Yes. The question is, who runs the security out there? To the best of my knowledge, it is not Wackenhut. This was part of the early folklore of the area. Wackenhut provides security at the nuclear test site. All these guys have name tags. Who's providing security at the outer perimeter of Groom Lake is a mixture of the contractor EG&G and regular Air Force. The regular Air Force are in supervisory positions. Now, the EG&G contract is all in flux right now, and I can't say 100% certainty it's still that, but it has been in the past. Shall I continue on and on forever? Take another question. Better be good. Yes. Long dirt road. You just trust the force, and he'll take you there. You look at a map. Groom Lake is 90 miles due north of us, and if you look up north, you'll see the closest highway is 375. You're going to go up the east side of the range. You're going to take US 93 north for about 80 miles and then turn on to 375. I publish a book, the Area 51 Viewer's Guide. Fortunately, I don't have any with me, but you can perhaps contact me afterwards, and if you intend on going up there, I can at least tell you where you can get the book. The place where you can still see the base is a 2-hour hike up an 8,000-foot mountain. You'll have to drive in. Again, it's going to be about 22 hours north of Las Vegas, and then a 2-hour hike to the top of this mountain. It's pretty strenuous for most people, but you can do it. And when you see it, you see what looks like an ordinary Air Force base. If you want the same satisfaction, you can go up to the west side of Vegas and look down on Nellis Air Force Base, and that's the same idea. Okay, I'll be lurking around for a while if anyone has any more questions. Sure. Sure, what the heck? Yeah, this might be a possibility. I serve commute back and forth. I still have an installation in Rachel, and I commute back and forth. I could go up later in the week, and if people are interested, we can all go en masse. We can just tie us through that border and just see how many of them they can take out. Yeah, so I guess I'll be either in the back or in the next room. Probably the next room might be a little bit easier. Okay, thank you.